The poet Alfred Austin once said that to nurture a garden is to feed not just the body, but the soul. The same could be said of visiting a public garden. This hour, public gardens in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, are here. We'll celebrate National Public Garden Day with a conversation about public gardens in Iowa, and Richard and Aaron will answer your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and this hour we're going to be celebrating a major holiday. Not Mother's Day, although we will celebrate that too. It's National Public Gardens Day today. Later on, we'll also be answering your questions. But right now, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is here, which, full disclosure, is a public garden. Hello,
yes.
Aaron.
Happy National Public Gardens Day.
A big day for you, huh?
Yeah.
All right, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Great to be with you today. And again, later on, we'll answer your questions, 866-780-9100 or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And it's a perfect time to visit public gardens. It feels like everything's in bloom right now.
I know. I think our short spring has compressed everything into like one time frame. It's kind of amazing.
Right. I was just thinking about how odd it is to have lilacs and red buds and my apple trees and everything.
And
blooming.
Even some daffodils.
Right. Still.
Yes. Yeah, I know. It's been kind of it's beautiful in the gardens right now.
Well, since it's National Public Gardens Day, let's start with a little bit of a definition. How do you define a public garden?
So, I mean, public gardens are kind of an umbrella term for all the arboreta, botanical gardens, and just really any space that is both open to the public but also has some kind of programming behind it. So these aren't necessarily like public parks that are run by municipalities or other cities and those types of things. These are places that not only have beautiful spaces but also have kind of a mission and programmatic idea behind them.
All right. So there are many beautiful public spaces, and we should visit those.
Yes, yes. But these are places, you know, I always kind of describe a botanical garden or a public garden as often they're much more like zoos and museums in that they have collections of living plants. They have educational programming. Many of them will focus on conservation in some way or another. And they also, because of the plants and the things that we're working with, tend to be very beautiful, too.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the public gardens in Iowa. And I know we won't hit all of them, probably.
No. It's hard to have a comprehensive list.
Right. And if you have a favorite public garden that you want to tell us about, you can call us, 866-780-9100. Let's start in central Iowa, which is, of course, where you're located. Mm-hmm. You are at Ryman Gardens in Ames. So let's go ahead and start there.
Yeah. It's a 17-acre garden. We have butterflies year-round in our butterfly wing, our butterfly conservatory. We have indoor spaces and outdoor spaces for lots of folks to enjoy. So, and central Iowa is really blessed with 5 different places within about 30 miles of each other, which is really quite amazing.
All right, well, let's go down the list.
Yeah. So the other big one that comes right to mind, of course, is the Greater Des Moines Botanical Garden, which is just next to the river near downtown Des Moines. They, of course, have the Big Dome conservatory that's been there since the late 70s and have done some wonderful things in their outdoor gardens. They are also celebrating National Public Gardens Day today with a big plant sale, just like Ryman Gardens is.
And the Des Moines Botanical Garden, I think, is something that, a lot of people in central Iowa turn to in the middle of winter.
Yes.
When things seem very bleak.
I think the dome is nearly an acre in size, if it's not an acre. So it's a nice big indoor space to enjoy year round, but especially in the winter.
Now, your next thing on your list is the Better Homes and Gardens Test Garden, which
yeah.
is not, I've never been there, and it's not one that I think of.
And it's not one that's open to the public all the time. So they have public hours during the growing season on Fridays from like noon to two. It's this little half acre. It's actually a private garden that opens itself to the public on a limited basis. So this is the photo studio for Better Homes and Gardens and other publications for Meredith. And it is a meticulously maintained, beautiful little half acre right in the center of downtown Des Moines.
All right. So maybe a good reason to take a Friday off.
Yeah,
sometime.
It's a good lunch break spot.
Well, and since it's a test garden, let's talk a little mm-hmm. bit about that, because I know that's something that a lot of public gardens do participate
yes.
in test gardening, which is one of the reasons that diehard gardeners might want to visit, right?
Yeah, you can see what's coming up. You can see what works and doesn't work in that area. So, you know, gardening across the country looks very different. I mean, just think about the four corners, Seattle to Boston to Miami to Phoenix. Like, these are four extremely different climates. And so knowing what works well in your area is really important, and public gardens help a lot with that, doing trials and evaluations, and you can see what these things look like. Another one on my list for central Iowa, the Iowa Arboretum, is great about this because they're planting trees and shrubs and other plants, and they don't do a lot of like meticulous care on these things. They do the level of care that we would do in our own, most of us would do in our own yards, and so you can kind of see what these trees look like in Iowa when you go out and visit the Iowa Arboretum.
Well, and so often, just in walking around the world, looking at people's yards, maybe a college campus, other mm-hmm. beautiful places, a lot of us look and say, oh, I love that tree.
Right.
I wonder what that is.
And in most gardens, it's labeled, which is really nice.
So it doesn't leave you with all of those questions.
Mm-hmm.
The Iowa Arboretum, there's another great arboretum in central Iowa
yes,
as well.
Yes, the Brenton Arboretum, which is just outside of Dallas Center, west of Des Moines. And that's another great spot. They have a lot of native plantings, too, a lot of prairie plantings. And that's another spot where you can just wonderful. I was actually just out there yesterday evening, and their crab apples are in full bloom, and it's just a really nice spot to kind of see a wide variety of trees. They have really focused a lot on conservation, especially for the Kentucky coffee tree, which they have a nationally accredited collection for. So it's just a really neat spot to go visit and enjoy the quiet and the beauty of a more rural location.
If you're thinking about trying to do something similar to what a public garden has done in your yard, I mean, if you're mm-hmm. thinking about doing a native plant landscaping project or something like that, is there an easy way to figure out which one of these places you should go to kind of get a real view of
yeah.
how it could work?
Well, their websites are great. The American Public Garden Association, which is the group that kind of organizes National Public Gardens Day along with a lot of other things, also has a wonderful online garden locator. It'll show you exactly what's there, and you can click on things and get to their websites that way. And just Googling botanical garden or arboretum or public garden, and then your city can get you a lot of great opportunities too, because their websites are full of information, not only about their location, but then all of the upcoming educational programs they might have. And many of these places, like the Brenton Arboretum, would focus on the types of things that they do there, like prairie plantings or trees and those types of things.
Well, and it's so wonderful to get an opportunity to see a landscaped environment that is several years along.
Yes.
When
yes.
you're trying to get things started.
Yeah. What will this look like in 40 years? Well, you can see that at some of these places. Yeah.
Well, hit some of the other highlights of public gardens around
yeah,
the state.
Yeah, so across the state, there's some really great other gardens, like the Central Gardens of North Iowa in Mason City, which has a lot of volunteer help, I know. Seed Savers, which we all know specializes in selling heirloom vegetables and flowers and other things. They also have some public kind of garden areas that you can visit. One of my favorites on the eastern side of the state are the Bicklehopped Arboretum in Clinton, which has a phenomenal dwarf conifer collection, and the Dubuque Arboretum and Botanical Gardens, which is also a huge volunteer organization, is another great spot on the eastern side of the state. Vanderveer Park or Vanderveer Botanical Gardens in Davenport's another one that you can find. And then kind of up in the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area, the Cedar Valley Arboretum and Botanic Gardens are another nice spot to maybe see this weekend.
Are we seeing more arboretums also including gardens than we used to, do you think?
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of people wonder what the difference is between the two, and it's a very loose definition. I mean, typically arboretums are more focused on woody plants, and botanical gardens may be a bit more ornamental herbaceous plants, but the line is very blurry. So just because they call themselves an arboretum doesn't mean that they're only going to be a bunch of trees and shrubs. Most of these places do have a lot of beautiful flowering plants, too.
All right. Now, of course, some people love to travel to public gardens around or, you know, want to hit a public garden when they're traveling.
Yeah.
What are some of the closer public gardens that you love?
So there's a couple of spots just across the river, both on the west and east coast of Iowa. So the Quad City Botanical Garden is in Moline, and that's a very nice spot. And Lauritsen Gardens is in Omaha, and that's right across the interstate from the zoo, and that's a beautiful spot, too. Those are places that aren't technically in Iowa, but certainly are very accessible to big parts of Iowa. But when I travel regionally, I like to visit places like the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum in the Twin Cities, Powell Gardens in Kansas City. In the Chicago area, there is a lot of options. The Chicago Botanic Gardens, the Morton Arboretum, Cantini Gardens on the west side, Lurie Gardens, which is right downtown. The Garfield Park Conservatory is one of my favorite hidden gems in Chicago on the west side. Anderson Japanese Gardens is in Rockford, which might be on your way to Chicago from Iowa. That's a beautiful Japanese-style garden that's very nicely done. And then, you know, the list goes on and on. Rotary Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin. Olbrich is a wonderful spot in Madison. And, of course, the Missouri Botanic Gardens is a world-renowned botanical garden in St. Louis.
When you go to a garden, now I realize as a horticulturist, you may have a very different experience than I do when I go to a public garden. But do you have some advice for people for how to get the most out of a visit?
Yeah, I think for check their website beforehand, understand, you know, when they're open, and a lot of the websites will have information about seasonally what's going on in terms of, like, do they have special exhibits going on, or is there certain, you know, like the tulips are in bloom, or our amazing peony collection is usually at its peak at this time of year, or those kinds of things. And, of course, a phone call can help answer some of those things as well. And then kind of understanding if there are any events or programs going on when you're going to be there. And then I just like to go, and when I get there, ask them what are the must-sees. And most places, if you pay admission and go in, they'll be able to circle the must-sees that you're there. Because many of these places are huge.
Right, and you just may not get to them.
Yeah, so you want to know what you need to see and then maybe what you can see on the second trip.
All right, and of course, going to a public garden is also a great way to celebrate Mother's Day.
So absolutely.
You can bring these two major holidays together.
Yes.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. And of course, you can call with your questions. With me today, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Our number, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I got to be on the Iowa State University campus last Friday, and it was beautiful, but Richard, it sounds like it's even prettier this week and everything's in bloom.
I think it is, with the crab apples and the lilacs and the red buds. The redbud is the unofficial tree of Iowa State University. It's everywhere. You don't see it during the summer when it's just kind of a small little normal tree, but right now it's quite spectacular.
Nice. Do you think, since things seem to be so compressed, is this bloom period going to be shorter than usual? It's been quite hot, not today, but it has been.
Right. The warm weather, if we have warm, sunny weather, windy weather, they tend to go very quickly. But if we have fairly calm, cool days, then they stay longer. But today's windy, so that may kind of tear some apart.
Well, and Aaron was talking about how it feels like everything's coming on all at once. I've just been stunned by how far along my peonies are from nowhere to, wow, they're going to bloom by Memorial Day for sure, I think.
And I thought that was not possible.
Right.
But they appear to, they probably will. Yeah.
All right, let's get to some questions. 866-780-9100. Tom is on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Tom.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a sour cherry tree about 9 feet tall, and last year it got infested with some kind of a cherry fruit fly for my reading. I thought it might be a western cherry fruit fly, but I can't be sure because I never actually saw one, but I certainly saw the result. And of course, I'm talking about maggot infestation. Mm-hmm. The crop was a total loss. I've learned from reading a little bit about the fly's life cycle, and that it won't be long before the females start laying their eggs under the skin of the ripening fruit. My question to you folks is, how and when does one go about spraying for these things, and with what?
Okay. I think your best bet would be a generic home fruit tree spray that you can buy at most garden centers. They typically contain 7 malathion and captan. And you can spray those on most of your fruit trees, apples and pears and cherries. Read the directions on the package. As far as the frequency and the amount, just follow directions. Make sure you get thorough coverage. Obviously, the critical period is after bloom, once the fruits start to form, and just prior to actual harvest. So that time frame is what you need to spray. Make sure you get thorough coverage. And you should be fine.
Okay. Follow-up question, if you don't mind. I understand that females have spent the winter underground in their pupa stage. How about just about this time of year, since the blossoms are falling off right now, just soaking the ground with insecticide, or are the pupae impervious to, like, malathion?
Well, it depends upon which insect it actually is. Typically, spraying the ground or drenching the ground with insecticide usually is not effective, no.
Okay. And finally, how about just throwing a fine mesh net over the tree and tying it off?
Boy, I'm not sure that's feasible. I mean, it has to be awfully, awfully fine. I think that would be difficult to do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Tom. 866-780-9100 is the number. Don is up next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Don.
Hi. I have a hybrid rhododendron, beautiful small flowers, that has bloomed every year by the 25th of April, a family birthday, as it turns out. And it's the first one lasted for must be 15 plus years. Well, I've had 3 at a different house and 2 at this house. 15 years now, another 12 or 15 on this tree. So it appears now on the 25th this year, there was nothing but curled leaves. But we had gone through a late freeze a couple weeks before that. So, you know, is it age or is it weather or was it, and it was terribly dry. And I didn't see that it was so dry and didn't water. So, I think it's dead, or should I wait? And or is this normal?
Okay, no, it's not normal. I think we had a fairly unusual winter, in that November, early December were much warmer than normal, and then very suddenly after Christmas it got extremely cold, bitterly cold. Then we had the very cold temperatures in March and early April. So it's been a rather odd winter, early spring, and so that may have cause some damage. I guess I would be inclined to wait and see if I start to see, hopefully, some signs of life. Buds? Are the buds? The plant may have lost its existing leaves, but are the buds still viable? If the buds are still viable, they should be breaking very shortly and putting on new growth. If you go out there the end of May, all the existing foliage is either brown or drying up, and you see no signs of life, then I think you've lost the plant.
Well, the foliage was about half of the tree, the foliage, or the bush, the foliage was still green but tightly rolled, and one branch was brown and appeared to be really dead. And I thought it was green and something was going to happen, but so far nothing, at least up to a day or two ago.
Okay.
Wait it out a little while.
Wait it out. I'm not very optimistic about the brown branch. I think that's probably dead, but again, I'd wait on that too.
Sure. Okay. But they don't have a short life.
Well, they're kind of demanding. Iowa's not really their preferred location. You see these very commonly on the East Coast, Southeast. That's the environment they like. So in Iowa, we have to pick and choose. Most do not grow here in Iowa, like the PJM does, very common. Then the other thing is they have very exacting requirements as far as site. They require a well-drained soil. It has to be well-drained. They also need an acidic soil, and they like partial shade. So very exacting as far as what they need. They have a very shallow fibrous root system, and so when it gets dry, they kind of feel the effects fairly quickly. So typically, you might have to water maybe mulch to make sure they have some moisture.
All right. Don, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that. Linda's on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Linda.
Hello. I have two questions. I have transplanted three concolor firs, just small guys, you know, kind of 3 to 4-ish feet tall, and I've lost two of them, and I'm wondering, I know they're a little tricky, but I wondered if there's something I specially need to be doing. And then the other thing is I have two firs that are, or pines actually, that are have multiple leaders, and they're like in the 5 to 6 foot height range. And how do you go about determining which one, what you cut or whatever, to establish a single leader as the tree grows taller?
Now, the trees that died, how long were they in the ground?
Actually, like 5-6 months.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the first winter is always going to be their toughest winter. And so hopefully they survive that winter. It's important that on newly planted evergreens, that we keep on watering in the fall, basically until the ground freezes. So you want to do that on a regular basis. And hopefully if you do that, they'll survive. That first winter is the toughest, and sometimes you do lose plants. If you get them through the first winter, their odds of survival are much, much better. As far as the trees with the double leaders, they should be breaking bud right now. And so I would go out and check these leaders, make sure all seem to be alive and vigorous and healthy, putting on nice new needles. And if they are, then I would choose the one that I think is the straightest and the strongest. If I see one that obviously isn't even leafing out, that may not be a good one, obviously, and I would not choose that one. So choose the best one as far as vigor, straight, and take off the rest.
All right.
Okay,
Thanks a lot for your call, Linda. And I mentioned earlier, of course, it's Mother's Day. That's a pretty special day for gardeners everywhere as far as warm season plants in the garden, isn't it?
It's kind of a time to go ahead and plant things like tomatoes and peppers and your things like petunias and marigolds, geraniums, because usually at this point, the chance of a frost or freeze is fairly small, usually.
All right. And of course, last week, it felt like summer all week long.
Right.
It's a lot cooler today. It's going to be cool tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So does that give you pause?
No, it's just if it's wet, obviously you can't plant. But if it's actually cool and cloudy, that's not a bad time to plant.
All right. I think people are maybe a little nervous this spring. A friend shared an anecdote this morning about her seven-year-old who went and said, I need to get a sweatshirt. I think it's going to snow again this morning. I think we're all a little shell-shocked.
It has snowed in late May and Iowa in the past, so that's a possibility, but very small, hopefully.
All right. Not likely.
Not hopefully. Likely.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Jeremy is up next in Lamoni. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. What's your question?
I've got a few mushroom beds around my garden area. I've got wine cap mushrooms and a few hardwood logs of like shiitake mushrooms growing. And I was getting ready to plant an oyster mushroom bed of some golden oysters because they're more tolerant of some heat. And I was just wondering if I need to worry about that being an invasive species in Iowa at all.
Boy, I have no idea on that. I would tend to think probably not, but I don't know definitely on that.
Okay, because I know the University of Illinois was doing a study, I think it was a few years back, about it being an invasive species. I just didn't know if you had heard anything about that or if anybody had any information.
No, I haven't. I haven't heard anything about that yet. So I think if you're worried, it might be something that you do maybe in a different, you know, if you can figure out how to grow some of these things indoors, you could try that if you're really worried about it or not. But I'd have to do more research on that one.
All right. Well, Jeremy, thanks a lot for your call. Stumping the horticulturist this morning.
Well, it is a fungus question.
It is. All right. We'll go to Paul in Prairieburg next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. I have a quick question. I have three hard maple trees that were transplanted as maybe 4 foot or 5 foot trees 35, 40 years ago. And they've all done really well up until last year. And this tree's probably now, I'm going to say 25 feet high, 20. Just beautiful trees. But last year there was one side of the tree that didn't leaf out, and now this year there's just on that same tree there seems to be just one branch that's going to have any leaves on it. I'm wondering if there's a disease that hard maple trees are contracting. The third tree, the smallest tree, is healthy as can be and all leafed out. The second tree, which is probably the bigger tree, looks like it might be affected a little bit. I'm just wondering is there a hard maple tree disease?
Well, there are many factors that can cause a tree to decline and die. Many, many factors. Obviously, insects, disease, soil conditions, weather conditions, etc. So, as far as disease-wise, the most common would be verticillium wilt. And you would typically see that during the growing season, where the tree would leaf out, and then sometime during the growing season, the leaves would dry up, turn brown, and fall off. And this would occur on a certain branch and then may spread through the canopy. And so it's not a case where the tree is fine during the growing season and next spring a branch is dead. That's typically not how it looks as far as verticillium wilt. It typically shows up during the actual growing season when the tree is in leaf.
Okay. Well, it was kind of a mystery to me. They'd just been thriving for all these years, and then last year noticed a problem,
right.
and this year's more severe. So,
we do have a publication on verticillium wilt that you can find on our Iowa State University website. We also have a publication on understanding decline in trees, where they discuss some of the factors that do affect their health and which can cause decline and eventual death.
All right, Paul, fun reading material. unfortunate situation. I hope things get better. Let's do some email questions here. This one's from Beverly. She says, my roses suffered winter kill damage. They're showing growth at the base, but old canes appear dead.
Yeah.
I don't recall what kind they are. They bloom all summer and are bushes, not tea roses. Can I cut out the old canes and let the new growth continue, or should I dig them up and start over?
No, you don't need to dig up and start over. As long as they were not grafted, the stuff that comes from the base is the same rose, and you see this often on roses. Just trim out the dead and let it start up again.
All right, here's a question from Tyler. A few weeks ago, I asked about a boxwood bush that had some brown spots from the winter. It has since become more brown, and I fear it's headed for death's door for some reason. I have three smaller boxwood that are thriving. I don't remember if they're a different species, but I'd like to get a new one of them and replace the dying one. When's the best time to dig up the dying plant and plant a new one?
I would do it sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Boxwoods are kind of finicky. They are. You walk around campus here at Iowa State. You walk around town. You see some that look great, and others look just horrible. They're brown. So they're kind of finicky. There are a number of varieties or cultivars. And I think their site is also very important. They don't typically like open exposed sites. They kind of like some protection if that's a choice. And eastern exposure typically is pretty good for them, but they're kind of finicky plants. And sometimes the winter can be very hard on them as far as both the sun and wind can dry out the foliage.
Here's a question from Sam, an interesting question. He says, I plant green beans. They all germinate. Half of them emerge normally, but half of them come out of the ground in a manner that looks like they're upside down. The two halves of the bean emerge from the ground along with the stem. Why does this happen, and is it meaningful to the bean plant?
I don't know that it is. Occasionally,
I would think not.
Yeah, occasionally I've noticed beans, they'll come up out of the ground, and the little kind of papery covering on the bean is stuck on there for a little while. But the plant's able to work through it typically, so it's not a big deal.
Happenstance.
Yeah.
It will pass. All right. If you have a question, you can give us a call. We're going to take a short break here, but you can call right now, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. You can join us, 866-780-9100. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. A couple more email questions here. This one's from Jane in Washington. She says, our four-year-old Rose of Sharon bush has not yet bloomed this year when everything else in the yard has. Lightly scratching the bark on the lower part of a branch shows a bit of green. Many bloom starts are brittle, however. What do you think happened? Could I have pruned it too late this spring, and is it now dying?
Well, we had a difficult winter. We had temperatures of maybe 15, 20 below zero, some areas colder than that, and they are prone to winter injury. They typically bloom in August. But they also leaf out very late, much later than most other trees and shrubs. So I think there's still hope, but they need to leaf out in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And if they don't, they may have lost certain parts of the plant, unfortunately.
All right. Here's a question from Lisa in Rockwell. She says, I have a shady backyard. I seed it with perennial shady grass seed every year. It grows in but doesn't come back the next year. I end up seeding every year. We once sodded it, but it too eventually died. What to do?
I ditch the lawn. That's hard to do, I know. But
sod is not going to work because that's bluegrass, and bluegrass does not like shade. It doesn't. And you can lay down sod, but within a year or two, it's going to be very, very thin again. So that doesn't work. As far as the grass, the fine leaf fescues do work. They do best in partial shade, not heavy shade. And if it's a tree, I like to sow the seed around mid-August. And that way I can keep the areas well watered. The grass seed should germinate. And I should have a good stand of grass before the trees start to lose their leaves. And then I can remove the leaves, keep on watering, and once it's well established, it should survive. The fine leaf fescues are things like creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue. They have very narrow leaf blades, so they're very fine textured. They really do quite well in part shade. I have quite a bit of it in my yard underneath an oak tree, so it can be done.
Yeah, I think the lesson, though, too, is it will always be more of a challenge.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Than in a sunny spot. It will always be more of a challenge, and it's all relative because a full shade is not going to be good even for the quote-unquote shade-tolerant grass.
All right, and maybe it sounds like you're suggesting think outside the lawn.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard to do.
it could be a bed of hostas very easily.
All right, let's go to the phones. Bob is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Yes, I have a question regarding Harry Lauder's walking stick. It's the red dragon variety, so it has red leaves. Now, unfortunately, I bought the plant last year and did not get it out, and I overwintered it in my garage with other plants, and I haven't seen any growth on it. The stems are very pliable. They do not break. They do bend. But I haven't seen any growth, and was suggested I give it some miracid, see if that will stimulate the roots. I'm wondering, would superphosphate maybe be better for it?
I think you just need to have a little bit more patience with it. You know, it went through a really stressful winter. We haven't had a lot of really warm temperatures in the grand scheme of things yet. I think I wouldn't be concerned about it leafing out. And I feel like the Henry Lauder's walking stick and some of these filberts and stuff leaf out a little bit later than other stuff do anyway. And so I would, you know, if you still have green in the stems, I would just wait a little bit. If you run the risk of kind of burning up some of the roots and really over-fertilizing if you're not too careful here. So I wouldn't suggest adding more fertilizer. I think making sure the container doesn't dry out and just give it a little bit more time. If you're not seeing things by after Memorial Day, that's when I would start being concerned.
All right. And at that point, is it too late?
Yeah.
Well, you probably can't do a whole lot now.
No, okay. But you can't do a whole lot now either. Right. So it's just kind of a wait and see situation.
All right, Bob, thanks for your call. Next up, Barb in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Barb.
Hi there. I have the weekly hydrangea question because I know they come up every week. Last week, you guys had said that it could be as late as the end of May before we really see budding. I have a new hydrangea I just planted last summer, actually late in the summer. It was from a box store, and it wasn't, you know, super big or anything. But I noticed there's a few green buds just at the base. Is that okay? I mean, is that – or is it – I guess I'm just trying to find out if it's going to – come back.
Is that a big leaf hydrangea, do you know? A
yes.
Big leaf hydrangea?
I guess I don't know. It's okay. One of the ever-blooming ones, and it was blue, and
okay.
I know that...
Then it's a big leaf hydrangea. And
okay.
There are many, many varieties or cultivars on those. And they're doing what is fairly typical, where you see the buds near the base begin to large first. The question would be, are the upper buds alive or dead? And again, I would wait a few more weeks before making that decision. We had a very hard winter, and I would suspect that maybe the upper portions have died, but I don't know that with certainty. So I would wait again till the end of the month.
So now, if the upper portions have died, I mean, can that lower part come back? And
sure.
Or okay,
it can come back,
and then,
right.
With the blue, how do I treat that with, is it alkaline that they prefer? Is there a blue, something that you amend the soil with each year that promotes blue?
Right. You either add lime, to make it more alkaline, or sulfur to make it more acidic.
Yeah. And the blue would need to be more acidic to be blue. It'll be pink.
Okay.
If the soil is more alkaline, which we tend to be, it'll be pink. If it's more acidic, it will be blue. It's hard for us to get it acidic enough to be blue in Iowa. The pink is pretty, too.
Yes. Well, and I didn't know if these would go to a pink or if they'd just go to, like, maybe a lavender or, I mean, when I bought it, obviously, they make them real showy and it's this incredible blue color. And then you start reading about it, and it's like, well, you know. we live where we live. But as long as there's something coming back, I'm okay. And then wintering that over, would I want to put something over it, like straw? Because I've been reading stuff about people even put burlap on these. Is that advisable?
Yeah, some people will go out in the fall, like in November, and they might make a cylinder out of maybe chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth, and then maybe cover the bottom 3 or 4 inches with soil, the actual soil, and then the rest, they might fill that cylinder with, like, straw, so it has some protection. And then leave that in place until basically early April and take it off.
All right, Barb, thanks a lot for your call. Next, let's go to Paul in Newhall. Hi, Paul. Oh, I think we've lost Paul. Next, then, Nancy in Des Moines. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Could you talk about the pros and cons of using shredded office paper as mulch in a garden plot?
Shredded office paper as mulch.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Well, I think, you know, it has all the same pros that like a shredded leaf mulch would have, or grass clippings or something like that. I think the only cons would be whether you can keep it in place and not blow away, and the appearance.
And if it gets extremely dry, it may form kind of a mat.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it rains, it may kind of run off and not actually soak through it. So if that happens, I'd want to go out with a hoe or something, kind of break it up. But that could happen during a prolonged dry period.
It's kind of like what grass clippings do, but more extreme. It would be more extreme with the paper.
More impervious to water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
All
okay.
Right.
Yep. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Nancy. Tim is up next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah. What's your question?
I've got something that's been attacking my yard for the last 3 years, and every year it gets worse. And it's got to be a fungus, a mold, or a mildew, but it kills the tomatoes, the peppers, it attacks the green beans, the grape plants. It's on all the broadleaf weeds in the yard, and it's in the trees, the maple trees. And every year it seems to keep getting worse. And it gets on the leaves or whatever. I think it's coming up through the system and starts curling them and turning brown. I have no idea what it is. I've talked to the nurseries, and they just kind of scratch their head, and they said they've never heard of it.
Well,
Somebody else in the town has got to be having this problem also.
I think you have multiple issues here, not the same thing, in that, for example, most insect pests and most plant pathogens tend to be host or plant specific. So something that would attack, for example, a tomato plant would not attack, for example, maybe a cucumber plant. So I think multiple things are going on. It's hard to say exactly what's going on. One thing you could do would be later on this year, if you start to see things as far as symptoms, take some photos and send those to our plant and insect diagnostic clinic here on campus. You can attach those to an email. Their email address is P as in plant, I as in insect.
Hey, can you hold on?
Okay,
I get
sure.
Pen, yeah? Yeah, this has been driving me crazy for the last few years.
But
cats go out in the yard in the summertime. When they come in the house, they're licking and scratching and biting, and it's just driving them nuts.
Okay. But take your photos, make sure they're nice and sharp, in focus, and send those photos to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. Their email address is P as in plant, I as in insect, D as in disease, C as in clinic, at iastate.edu. So PIDC at iastate.edu.
All right.
Very good. Yeah. Boy, I sure will beg an answer. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Good luck with that, Tim. Next up, Allie in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Allie.
Hi. I had made a donation to the Arbor Day Foundation this year, and with every donation, you got 10 Norwegian spruce trees. Unfortunately, I have no room for Norwegian spruce trees. So I was wondering what the best way to donate them is, whether to the city or to a parks department or anything like that. I've looked for that information, but I just can't find a seam to find any.
Yeah, yeah. Norway spruce is a pretty big tree, so 10 of them take up a lot of space.
Yes.
I think your best bet, I mean, if you've already contacted kind of your local parks or department or something like that, is to really just use your network of friends and family to see if anybody can take even just a couple of them. Are they bare root? I assume they're bare root.
Teeny tiny little bare root.
Yeah,
I have
so
wrapped up in my fridge right now.
Yeah, and you're gonna want to find a home for them soon. So that's why it will be a little bit difficult for that. But most gardens and city areas aren't going to be using plants that small, and so they're gonna really struggle to accept a donation like that. It's also a tree that most gardens and city probably already have, and so it's not something that they're gonna really want to take because of the work that goes with it. So I think your best bet's going to be finding, you know, you put it out on Facebook or
right,
something.
Right, put it in a gardening group or a
pot
them
up
or something.
And bring them to a garden club that has a plant sale.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good idea too. That trees that small could be in a mm-hmm. gallon container
right.
probably.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, good luck with that. Nice that you want to find a home for them.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Here's a question from Marlene. She says, my neighbors had a lawn company spray their lawn for weeds. Some of the spray seems to have drifted into my perennial flower bed, which is right next to their yard. Some of the poppies and phlox are drooping and curled. The peony flower heads are also drooping and the foliage feels sticky. I didn't notice this until 3 days after the spraying was done. I hosed them down after I noticed the symptoms. What do you think the prognosis is? I called the company yesterday, but they have not gotten back to me.
I think it's fairly good that these plants are sensitive, yes, but most of them, if it's just drift, not sprayed directly, but drift, most of them will recover over time.
All right, here's a question from Emily in State Center. She says, instead of using Roundup, I'm trying a small propane torch to kill weeds. If I torch weeds that are growing amongst exposed tree roots, will this do damage to the tree? And what about crabapple suckers?
I would not use it on crabapple suckers, probably. You have the potential of damaging. It depends. It all depends on the application. If I venture into the world of fire weeding, I tend to keep it on things like cracks in the sidewalk, driveways, like those types of things. It's a little bit more of an art form to do it within beds and not cause damage. So, you can use it, but I like to use it in places where the residual and surrounding areas are really easy to deal with, like cracks in the sidewalk.
All right. It's a nice controlled area.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a question from Becky. I have a question about tomato plants. Several of our tomato plants were decapitated or severely wind whipped during the strong winds earlier this week. Some of the plants snapped completely, leaving a long stem. While others were left with just a few leaves. My husband wants to nurse these plants, hoping they'll eventually regrow. I think it's a waste of time, and I want to replace them. What do you think?
I think they will recover if they're given good care. But that's a personal decision. I think I'd be inclined to stick with them. I've had them where they frosted or froze, and they came back from the base, and they were perfectly fine. So it's up to them how patient they are. If they're patient, I would keep them.
Okay. And I would be inclined to go buy a new one. I think it depends if you want to spend money on it, too. So.
Well, and I was going to ask about the patience. I mean, does that mean waiting longer for tomatoes?
I think Richard's more patient than I am.
Well, I think they're going to recover fairly quickly if given a chance, in that if they've been in the ground for a while, they've been established, mm-hmm. and they can come back very quickly. If you put in new ones, they have to get established first.
That's true.
So,
yep.
All right. So, okay.
Pros and cons.
Been in the ground for a while. I mean, how long? How long is a while at this point? Because they can't have been in the ground too long.
I would think maybe a week or so,
okay.
Possibly.
All right. But Richard, I think you're more patient than most of us.
On some things, I think I am. But other things, no.
All right. Well, we are out of time for today. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Aaron Style, thank you.
Yes, hopefully you can see a garden today.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to cross one off my bucket list. I'm going to go to Ewing Park in Des Moines.
Oh, that's a great one.
See all the
lilacs
this weekend.
Yes.
Should be perfect for that.
Uh-huh.
All right. Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Ben Stanton, and Emily Woodbury. We had production assistance today from Natalia Reyes. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.